You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for May 1st, 2015. This week, I'm talking about the AHA-canceling Q-Core, LVADs and heart failure gene therapy, statins in the elderly, hand sanitizers, and a tribute to my fellow blogger, Dr. Melissa Walton Shirley. This is a different background, you may notice. This is the day before Kentucky Derby, Oaks Day. And on Oaks Day, schools and medical offices are canceled, so I'm recording from home. Let's start with the Q-Core meeting being canceled in Baltimore. The quality of care and outcomes research section of the AHA focuses on what works, what doesn't work, and what things cost. This sort of research is vital now more than ever. We have to know value. Benefits don't stand alone. We must weigh them against cost. So it is telling that the Q-Core meeting was the first meeting since World War II that was canceled. Social unrest and riots made the meeting unsafe. I wonder, just could there be a more vivid example of the fact that doctors don't practice in a vacuum, that we're all connected in this world? As you read our two stories on theheart.org on Medscape, think about what you can do or we can do about these social situations. One thing that always comes to my mind is stewardship. We certainly can contribute to these problems with inequality by cutting down on waste. We can stop burning money in healthcare. Next topic is two real-world studies of LVAD therapy. These stories, these studies were to be released at the Q-Core meeting. The first study, Dr. Tim Fendler and colleagues from Mid-America Heart Institute in Kansas City sought out to understand the likelihood of poor outcomes and predictors after LVAD therapy. They studied 164 patients from their institution who had one-year data available. They defined poor outcomes as a combination of death and poor patient-reported quality of life, like recurrent heart failure admissions. They found poor outcomes in about 35% of LVAD patients in the first year. And predictors of a poor outcome one predictor of poor outcomes was whether the LVAD was used as destination therapy versus bridging. It was 46% in destination therapy and 26% in LVADs as a bridge. The second study came from the same group of investigators at MidAmerica, and this study sought to describe the incidence and predictors of cognitive decline in patients with LVADs. They looked at more than 1,100 patients from the Intermac registry. They used serial cognitive testing called the trail-making B test on these patients. And they found a third of LVAD patients had significant cognitive decline in the first year. And predictors here included, of course, age, chronic kidney disease, more severe heart failure. But an interesting one was that if you had good cognitive function before the LVAD, you were more at risk to have cognitive decline after. So a Hardwire on Medscape journalist, Michael Reardon, has a very extensive story in which he talked with the lead PI, Dr. Fendler. And the takeaway is that these findings underscore the importance of clear and frank discussions with patients and families about the expectations of LVAD therapy. Dr. Fendler, in the interview, noted that death is surely an important outcome, but it may not be the only outcome that patients and families care about. I reached out to my friend and decision quality researcher, Dr. Dan Matluck. He's at the University of Colorado, and he sent back a note to me that he really liked this study because of the methodology, the combining death and quality of life into one outcome is really important because patients really want to know, will I do well or won't I? And he sent me a really nice quote. He said, ultimately, the numbers weren't surprising to him. Tough to predict. And caring clinicians sharing decisions in a way that is respectful and respectful of whatever choice the patients choose is likely the only way through this one. So I think this is really important stuff. LVADs are certainly an up-and-coming therapy. It's really important for us to know all aspects of the expectations. The next thing I wanted to talk about was gene therapy for heart failure. In a press release, the biotech company Celadon reported disappointing performance of its novel gene-based therapy. Their compound, which they call Mitocar, delivered via an intracoronary injection, targets myocardial relaxation and contraction via intracellular calcium regulation. They reported the CUPID 2B trial, which was placebo-controlled in 243 patients. There were no significant differences in heart failure outcomes. I have some comments on this. Molecular and stem cells as therapeutic strategies for heart failure seem to be not so easy, more daunting than I had thought. I mean, I once believed that the new generation of doctors would be able to gift heart failure patients mulligans simply by injecting stem cells or genes, and the heart would grow new muscle or new pacemaker cells. 2 years ago at the AHA, cell biology and stem cells were all the rage, but this not so much now. I guess it's not surprising, such transformative science, we should expect it to move slowly. Next up is a provocative statin study. What if all patients older than the age of 75 took a statin? Dr. Michelle Auden from Oregon State University and co-workers from UCSF and Columbia, they wanted to project the population impact and effectiveness of primary prevention statin use in elderly patients over the age of 75. They published their study in the Annals of Internal Medicine. They used data from the NHANES and PROPER trials, data from elderly patients in those studies, and they formed a simulation model of statin use for a wider population. They found that at the current level of statin benefit, the relative benefit, widespread statin use in this population of elders would indeed be cost-effective. They estimated 8 million new statin prescriptions and 105,000 prevented cardiovascular events. However, and this is a big however, the population benefit assumed that there was no increase in statin adverse effects in, say, functional decline or cognitive decline. Even a small rise in adverse effects from statins could negate that benefit or turn it towards harm. HeartWire on Medscape journalist Marlene Busco spoke with Dr. Michael Rich, who is the editorialist in the Annal study, and also Dr. Neil Stone, who is the chair of the expert panel on ACC and AHA guidelines. They both sounded a word of caution about statin use and emphasized the importance of patient-level discussions. My comments are that this is a population study, and physicians must make statin recommendations based on an individual basis. And the writers noted in the paper that statin benefits could be tremendous, and that's true on a population level. But the patient doesn't care about what happens to the population; they care about what happens to them. And you can put me down for being very, very concerned about the use of statins as primary prevention in the elderly. I'm worried about the statin lifestyle interaction. In fact, I'll go so far as to say that I think the use of statins in kyphotic, frail, malnourished elderly patients is metaphorical for what's wrong with so much of medicine today. I mean, I put it right up there with the use of ADHD drugs, the overuse of SSRIs, and even testosterone roll-on gel. I mean, remember what Osler said. Osler said it was the job of physicians to convince the masses not to take medicines. The next topic is hand sanitizers. This week, the FDA announced that healthcare antiseptics have to be proven safe and effective over the long haul if they are to remain on the market. Wow. Robert Lowes from Medscape Medical News has a detailed story on this, and I was struck by what the FDA is interested in. Listen to this. Topical absorption, potential hormonal changes, possible bacterial resistance, and adverse effects, if any, in pregnant and or breastfeeding caregivers. Mr. Lowes noted in his paper, in his story, that this could cause cognitive dissonance amongst caregivers. I'll say, I mean, here we are immersed in this very important infection control measure, and now the FDA is talking about proving safe and effective these ubiquitous hand sanitizers that we use hundreds of times per day, and if you count that over months, a year, a career, that's a lot of exposure. Look, I'm no chemical, I'm not a chemical warrior, so to speak, but this is certainly interesting news. Finally, I've become or tried to focus more on becoming an old-fashioned hand washer where I use a sink and water and soap, and I try and do it in front of the patient as a sort of ritual that my doctor did, kind of an old-school thing. Anyways, the final topic I want to mention today is a shout-out to on an essay that Dr. Melissa Walton Shirley wrote called A Death Well Lived. MWS is what I call her. She's just a beautiful person. She's kind. She's passionate about doing what is right and just. She loves being a doctor. She's been a mentor to me in the press room. And I think she's a beautiful writer. So just go take a look at that essay, Death Well Lived, and I'll link it below. It's really beautiful. So that's it for this week in cardiology. Tomorrow's the Kentucky Derby. I hope the background here at home wasn't distracting. And until next week, this is John Mandrola on theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.